Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer. Father, we pause and again ask your presence here with us. We thank you for your presence. And thank you for the blessing of your word and your word in song and how that touches our hearts and moves our hearts and moves the heavens. And Father, I pray that you would bless as we look at this subject of our electronic devices, as we find our way through these challenges that we face, that you would direct our thoughts here and give each brother here as they think about their experience, their church setting and the families and the youth, and to think about where is a good place for us to be on these subjects. Give them wisdom somehow through the sharing this afternoon. In Jesus' name, amen. I was so blessed in the message. Brother John, I have to tell you something that my father says. My father is a very talkative man. Anybody that knows him knows that when there's people around, he knows what to do with it to keep them, things going. And someone taught him this little phrase that says it is not polite to stop talking while people are listening. And I thought about that as you're going, Brother John. I thought, you know, it's not polite to stop when we're soaking this in. You got so much where we should just let you keep on going. But we understand the program too. And but I'd like to tell a little story about songs. I had too much to say in my message, but I can't pass this. Glory to the Father in this song. Brother John mentioned When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. About 10 years ago in New York City, we were having street meetings and had the chorus there. We were singing with young people down in the subways. And it's a 2 or 3 day event. They were singing there. After the second day, we always take water bottles along for them, and they're singing their hearts out, and their voices are fading and faltering, and they're begging us, when can we stop? We just can't hit those high notes anymore. And so it was time to quit on the last day there. My wife and I went out of the subway first up to the park, and we were planning, communicating with the bus driver and some of those things. When I came out, the park was full of people. And we looked around, and this was a time when a man had projected that Jesus was going to come back that day. He had set a date, and this was big news, and people, there was a lot of talk about it. But here in the park was a whole group of heathen young men mocking Jesus, and they had set up a cross, and they would stand there and pretend they were crucified and mocking Jesus. And a whole crowd gathered around these crowd mockers, and they were a militant group. They were really scary people. And there was a street preacher over there. And when our group came up out of the subway, I said, well, let's sing one song here in the park off to the edge. And the street preacher heard it, and he came over and he said, come over and sing here next to the cross. That's where he set up. And I thought, no, we don't want to get into some fist fights. We don't want to. So another brother was with me. We were looking at it, and we had a little prayer there, and we felt like we should take our group over there to sing. But we told them, if it doesn't go well, if this deteriorates, split up in your little groups, leave the park the 4 different directions, and meet 3 blocks over. That's where the bus is. So we made an exit plan because we weren't sure it was going to work. And I must admit, I was scared. I didn't have the faith that I should have had. And we moved in there right next to the cross. And Tony Hollinger led us in, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. It makes goosebumps on my back to tell it. And there these young people got a second wind, and we sang for an hour to the crowd that the Jesus mockers had pulled there. We sang to them. And the young men mocking Jesus were gone. You couldn't find them the whole hour. We wondered where they got to. So we quit singing, this man had projected that Jesus would come at 6 o'clock in the evening. And I told the group, we don't want to be there at 6 o'clock. We do our witnessing, get out of there. I don't want that pressure. So 6 o'clock was coming. As we left the park, down at the far corner, there's a little bus stop, a little pavilion. And down there was cowered those mockers. They cowered in the farthest corner in the park while we sang about Jesus at the cross. And as we passed, they threw dust in the air and spit at us. But they had no power at the cross in the face of singing, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. I don't know what God did in their hearts, but I know what He did in the hearts of our young people. They saw a clear contrast between the works of darkness and the power of Almighty God and the power of Christian song. Well, God is good. You can trust Him. to finish that story, we got out of the city. But one of our members who lives in the city that night said, "You should have been there." At 6 o'clock at night, 6 o'clock when Jesus was to return, there was a thunderstorm off to the west. And as the sun shone through the thunderstorm, there was a double rainbow across above New York City. Beautiful. Jesus was there at 6 o'clock. Not in the way that man projected he would come. Well, that's not my message today. But we can certainly trust him. Now, I've appreciated the fellowship here very much. You're easy to preach to. And you soak this in. And I sense, even though we have some differences in practice and places we draw the line, that there's a spirit here to do what God wants us to do. And I appreciate that. So today as we talk, again, you're going to hear me talking some from the perspective of where I am with what our church does with it. And I'm going to suggest some things, talk about some things, and you can pick and choose and take some lessons. And you don't have to agree with me, but the Bible commands you to love me. And so I want to do the same to you as well. Years ago, I was preaching in Michigan, a week of revivals. I was a young preacher and still a little timid behind the pulpit. And a Baptist preacher came that night. And of all things, the Lord had laid on my heart to preach about sanctification. And I had some drawings to put on the board. And my teaching of sanctification differed greatly from this Baptist preacher's. And as I was preaching, he said right out loud, "No way." And I lost my thought and I got scared and I trembled. And a little later, he said, "Not in my Bible." And I was sweating and I was fretting and praying to get through this. And finally he got up and he went out and slammed the door behind and left. And then I thought, "Thank you, Lord. I think I can preach." And it went about 5 minutes and the door opened up and he came back in and he sat down on the back bench and he was quiet. And I knew we were going to get it after the service. And so we got to the back of the service. Brother Art Nault was the pastor there. He's quite taller than I am. And so I did my little sneaky thing. I saw to it that I was standing second in line. You can meet Art first. Art knows you and you can... And as he came back there, of all things, as Art shook his hand, he said, "What did you think of the message?" And I thought, "Art, you're just asked for it." And he said, "Well, you saw I was upset. You saw I didn't agree. And I left storming out of here. But the Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, you need to go back and listen to that man." He said, "I was faithful to the Spirit." And Art said, "But you didn't answer my question. What did you think about the message?" And he said, "Well, me and the Holy Spirit are going to have to talk about that one for a long time." So if you would be kind to me today and not say, "No way, not in my Bible," I would appreciate it. But you don't have to agree with me. The title is Maintaining Mastery Over Our Electronic Devices. And so the title suggests that perhaps we will have some use of this. But we need to control it. We need to master it. We need to hold on to it. When I was a boy, my daddy raised goats. And one time we had a billy goat that became ornery and he had big horns and my daddy was a cripple. And this billy goat caught my dad off guard and pushed him in the corner. And we boys rescued my dad and we decided it's time we sell this billy goat. So, but this billy goat, if you put him in a pen, he'll tear the pen down. And so we got a big young fellow from our church who was a really strong man. We got him to come help us load up the billy goat. We chained up his horns and we chained his horns fast to the cattle racks on the truck so he couldn't destroy it. Taking him to Roots Market. We got to Roots Market and the man said, "Take the chains off. I'll handle that billy goat." And we said, "But he's vicious. He'll charge. He'll..." "No, take the chains off. I'll handle it." He stood at the back of the truck there and the gate was open. And so we went from the outside and took the chains off to stay away from this billy goat. And as he was released, he looked around and he charged that door. And that man grabbed a hold of him by the beard. And that billy stopped and he walked tenderly with him and followed him. The man chained him fast and then backed up and left go and said, "Now we'll let the other man figure out how to take him home." I wish I could tell you today where to get a hold of the handle of technology. I wish I could tell you. You don't need those chains. All you need to know is know how to handle it. Well, that's the subject. Mastery. Satan and the things that we face today. It's so difficult sometimes to know how, what is the right way. And there's so much mixed together, so much good, so much useful, so much that we have to have, but so much that corrupts. May I suggest to you this afternoon that one of the things that your brotherhood should do is continue to look at the question that we talked about yesterday. What is the spiritual impact of any of these devices on our hearts? That should probably be a continual question that you think about. Regardless where you draw the line and what you're using, we should think about what is the impact. You know, what is the difference between this smartphone and a 20-ounce claw hammer? You put a 20-ounce claw hammer in the hand of a wicked man who hates you and wants to destroy you, and you better look out. Because that's a dangerous device, but it's dangerous because of the heart of the man who holds it. Now, I know there's a huge difference between a hammer and a smartphone. I understand. There's a huge difference. But the point is that the heart of the hand that holds it has a lot of impact on what is done with that tool. There are some tools that good hearts after God will not pick up because they're only used for wrong purposes. And I don't want to be seen with one of those in my hand. And so we have this wrestling between, is it okay or isn't it? And if we do, then what do we do and how do we find our way? I believe today that if a man is faithful, if a man and woman is faithful to God in this age of corruption, it's because he or she chose to be faithful, chose commitment to God, chose submission to Jesus Christ. And so there's one part of it that I would like to tell you, pastors, that listen, it's all in the heart of your people. But you and I are called to shepherd and shelter and help and protect. And so how do we set up? How do we help our people to protect them and yet also teach them to stand and use a 20-ounce hammer for what a 20-ounce hammer is supposed to do in a constructive way and not destructive? And those are the two things that we could spend all day and we still probably wouldn't get it put together. Something that we continue to wrestle with. I have a number of points I'd like to talk about this afternoon. The first one comes from Psalm 101, verse 3. You may turn there if you like. You probably know this verse, where the psalmist David says, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave unto me. And this is not a controversial point. We would all agree today that we dare not set wickedness before our eyes. I don't need to drill the Bible principle because it's all through the Scriptures. I will set nothing wicked before mine eyes. And one of the huge industries that capitalizes on our devices is the pornography industry. And there's statistics of the billions of dollars made on pornography each year. But so number one is, as children of God, we may not set our eyes on wickedness. And this is somewhat at the core of this whole thing. I'm tackling one of the worst parts of it first, is the availability of so much damning exposure and the vice that is there. And when people get, it's my experience in helping people that have gotten trapped in pornography, is that they almost cannot on their own seek God and recover. They need a brother or sister to walk with them to recover. And I don't know that I fully understand that, except that it is such a gripping vice that, and that's not to limit the power of Jesus Christ in delivering a soul and setting them free, that they have no desire for it afterward, but he often doesn't choose to do it that way. It's often a journey of discipleship to say no to the flesh and find your way back to God. And so there's so much out there to give itself to us. Now in our group we have, as I told you the other day, we have the no filter, no accountability, no internet. So we have an accountability sheet. We have some questions that we ask. Sometimes we fill it out on a paper and hand it into our little group. Sometimes we sit down as a group and we talk about it. And so in our congregation there we have a blind man. We have a blind man in our congregation. And as I handed out the questionnaires one time, he said to me, do you want me to fill this out? And I thought, oh, what a blessing to be blind. Pornography has nothing for you. But I was wrong. I was wrong. You can get books, electronic books, where it's read to you, you know, stories of the same kind of, no, it's not a picture. He can't feast his eyes on that. But he can feast your heart on the story of sensuality. It's out there. At one point I thought, well, it'd be wonderful to be blind to be delivered from that. And then when I saw and realized, I said, old Lucifer has every possible way to even ensnare a blind man with with this lust. And so we may not set wickedness before our eyes. And so, but the problem is, in my day as a youth, I was introduced to bad pictures behind the corn shed on a piece of paper. And fathers and mothers did not talk about that enough, in my opinion. Did not ask enough of questions. Because we thought, I'm not sure why, but perhaps we thought there's not exposure, but there was. And so, in every era of time, this old trick of Satan has been there to strip up God's people and steal hearts. And so, I believe today that anything that we use that's able to access the web and those kind of things, we need filters and accountability. We need to be regularly checking up on each other. And I ask this question, is it sufficient to just rule out all use? The problem is, it's out there at so many other places. In my day, when we were first opening up to the internet and it was office use only, I was teaching school and we didn't want it in the school, of course. So I had no option to use it. I didn't have an office. And so to buy a plane ticket, the option was to go to the library and use it. And so I went to the library and I sat down there in the library to buy a plane ticket online. And beside me sat a wicked girl who pulled up something on the screen and was showing me. And I realized the wickedness of her heart and I got out of there. And then I said, now, wait a minute. It is not safe to say just do it at the library. You understand the wrestling, because I don't want it in the home. I don't want it so accessible. So if it's at the library, it's limited to library hours and it's in public. But there's snares there as well. And that, incidentally, that computer didn't have filter and accountability on it because it was at the library. I do not believe that it's wise to have employees from the community or another church owning the computer in my business and so that I can be part of a fellowship that says none, but it's here, but it's owned by them. I don't believe that's wise, because oftentimes what that means is I have access to it without filters. And I understand there's differences here. I would recommend that whatever you do, you give direction to it. If you choose that we will not own them, someone else will, but then also make the choice that that person owning it will have it filtered and accountable and put some of those things on. And so regardless whether you own it or your employee owns it, I believe it needs to be filtered and accountable. It needs to be locked down. It needs to be some kind of restrictions. Because the reality is that many people have access to it and feel they need it. And the reality is many flip phones can go places you should not go. And so one of the difficult things about this subject is, I hate to tell you can go where you shouldn't go with a flip phone, because you might be tempted to try it tonight. And then I have failed in pointing your feet towards something wrong. That's what's tough about this, because when you talk about where the snare is and help your people understand the snare, then you might point their feet in a wrong direction. Some wrong heart or in a moment of weakness would say, well, I wonder what that looks like. I believe that we need accountability in our groups regardless whether we have access to the internet or not. We need to talk about it, because all of those vices, and I know it's a faster route in through electronic, but Satan is out to deceive the very elect. And we need to have the same kind of conversations. If I think that, well, it'd be easier to administrate church by locking everything out because we don't have time for accountability meetings, I'm missing something, because there's still a corn shed and there's still printed page and that kind of stuff is happening. It is. Shepherd's fold is full of men. Men come through there who learn things, not just on electronics, and got involved in things. And so I believe it's better to define how and where the web may be used, even if it's very limited or off-site, how and where, than to say no, unless you mean no completely, and no as in no. You know, it's probably one of the harder words in the English language to understand, but it's very simple. No is just no. It means no. And don't touch, don't look, don't consider. And then make whatever changes in work and lifestyle and whatever to be no. And so I believe that we must have accountability. So I would like to just, with this point of accountability and with this point, I'd just like to put something on the board here. And this is not all inclusive, but as I understand it, there's two kinds of ways you can set this up. And on one side here, I'm going to write a filtered use. And what that looks like is here I am in this corner, and around me is this dotted line to represent a filter. So I'll just use my experience in my work. We buy hardware from Orgill, and so they have a web page that I need to go to. We buy tractor parts from A&I. They have a web page that I need to go to. We buy things from Paul B. in Lancaster County, and they have a web page that I need to go to. And so as I go to my computer, my laptop, or whatever, and I go to one of these websites, and then this website responds to me, and I order whatever, it goes through this filter. And this filter is looking for bad words, is looking for... Filters are set up in a variety of ways. They don't catch everything. Their standards aren't always what we would consider acceptable or not acceptable. But it goes through a filter. Now, what's difficult with this, and I don't know how to say this, I'm not going to use the words, but particularly in the plumbing world, there are things that we search for sometimes in terms that are acceptable plumbing terms that are also part of the smut world. And so you search for one of those terms, and the filter, bing, sets it off right there. Because it's a bad word in the smut world. And that you can't go there. You can't look up some things. In fact, this is a side note. In this world of wokeness, I wonder what they will do with the plumbing world to make it not gender specific. That's another subject. So this filtered exchange. But now here comes a man in and he needs a Komatsu air filter. And none of these places sell that. And so I simply put this request out here and type in Komatsu 955 air filter to find out where can I buy this. And it browses the whole web. It doesn't just go to a specific site. It looks at the wide range and says, here's some possibilities. And I can land on one of those and order it, and it comes back through the filter. If there's a bad word in there, it's going to kick it out. That is filtered internet, which allows you to go anywhere and browse, except it won't let certain things through the filter. The other kind of setup is what is called a whitelist. And so a whitelist is same deal. Here am I, and I need to go to Orgill to order hardware, and I need to go to A&I for tractor parts, and I need to go to Paul B. And so you have this, and it's done various ways, but I'm just going to call it a server that your computer would go to, and it will only let you go to here, Orgill, or A&I, or Paul B. That's it. We have said that those sites are okay to go to, and from there you can only go there. But you cannot go, I can't find anything else. It's a whitelist, meaning that it's acceptable places that you can go to. So you have companies like eMyPeople, which is owned by Mennonites, and you have the Compass Foundation, which I'm not sure exactly who you would contact with them. But those people do that kind of thing. And that's a very specific way to have some access to, say, a place to order without wide open access. This one is a lot more open and has a filter. So in my work, we have a filter, and then we also have, well, so filters like this would be things like Covenant Eyes, does a good job. One of the things that I like about Covenant Eyes is they snap screenshots every so often, and you don't know when they snap them, and those are saved. And so whoever's your accountability partner, they can look at screenshots that were taken. They're pretty good at figuring out the shades that are skin shades and taking pictures when stuff like that is up. And then they often catch you if you're at places you shouldn't go. If they didn't get you stopped because of words, if you got somewhere, they also have screenshots. So that's one of the filters that's out there. There's many, many, many filters like this. But there's another one out there that's called Accountable accountable, and I think they use the number two in the middle, accountable to you. Accountable to you is not a filter. It does not stop you. Accountable to you records every click, every word you searched, everywhere you went, every website, and your accountability partner can click on any one of them and see what did that page look like. So in our work, we have a fairly open filter so that I can go find some plumbing things and it doesn't stop at every word. A fairly open filter and accountable to you. And when accountable to you senses anything, all those plumbing terms, it sets a flag and it sends it to, we have six men in offices, six different offices, and there's one email address that's common for everybody, office@jonestownag.com. And all six of those men have that email on their computers. And as soon as you set a flag, as soon as you search for something that it says might be a problem, it goes to office@jonestownag, and any of those six brothers in that place can see what were you searching, and they can see exactly what you searched for, and they can click on it to see what was there. And so if you're going to do anything bad, it's all open. There's nothing hidden. If you want to cover your tracks, you've got to quickly cover it with six machines spread through the building. That's what we do where I work. This is all the first point of, as children of God, we may not set our eyes on wickedness. And we have to do something to protect ourselves. We have to get a hold of something to control that nasty billy goat. And if you're going to have it, you're going to have to know how to hang on. And it's not always easy. It's a little time consuming. It sometimes costs you money. Those filters are generally not free. Your best ones you pay for because someone puts time into it. And so I believe we need filters and accountability for any kind of use. And we need accountability even if we don't have use. We need to be talking. Secondly, I'd like to talk about the question that we started with. But the second point is we must seriously consider the impact that our devices have on us. 1 Corinthians 6, would you turn there? 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12. And I wish to be able to help more of my people to grasp the impact of what Paul was saying. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12. And you'll have the same challenge in working with these things. Paul says, all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. 1 Corinthians 6, 12. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Listen, I have to tell you that when I work in this environment, I am under the power of this stuff to some degree. You cannot deny that. And you must think about what that power is. That's what I had to repent of a little in preparing for this. I told you that the Lord spoke to me. There's some things that I spend too much time on. I like the news and what was happening in Afghanistan. I just had to say, I can't go there. I got to deliver myself. And so there is a power. You cannot deny it. There is a power. What is that power? And Paul said, to serve my God, there's some things that would be okay and right, but I will have to, you know what we call that? Self-denial. We live in an age when it's this me world. And this age of why can't I have it? What's wrong with it? But the better question is, what is right with it? What will it help? And how can you switch that in people's minds to help them to say, well, there's a whole pile of stuff I don't need. In fact, I will not pick up anything. I will not get into anything unless I have a purpose for it. Instead of, well, it's out there, it'd be neat to have it, I can afford it. That's one of the reasons why we face this stuff, because we can afford it. We must seriously consider the impact of our devices. Now, as I understand it, 1 Corinthians 6 is the context of bodily desires. If you look at the verses around there, it's about fornication and it's about a harlot. And in that, he says, all things are lawful, but they're not all expedient. They're not all good. They're not all profitable. And they don't all benefit. And all things are lawful, but there's some things I won't put myself under. But now go to 1 Corinthians 10. Same identical verse in a different context. I wonder if you know what the context is. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 23, he says, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Do you know what the context is? The beginning of 1 Corinthians 10 is about what? Idolatry. Exodus 32, idolatry. So in the context of fornication and the pleasures of the flesh, he said this. And in the context of idolatry, he said this. And it's very appropriate for the subject of technology, because idolatry is here and wrong bodily desires is here. But there's nothing wrong with it. But there's power and there's a pull and there's an influence. We must be serious about the impact that these devices have on us. Power to motivate responses from us. Power to influence our thinking. Dominate our time. Power to change our values and priorities. Power to change our circle of friends through these apps, Facebook and whatnot, that is social. Power to change our friends. It used to be, in my day, it used to be that our circle of friends was our church group. It doesn't have to be that way anymore. Someone can be at your church. A young person can be growing up who actually has closer ties to a different circle than their home congregation because of social media. In fact, they soak up more. They can learn more from their peers than they do from their mom and dad. I want you to imagine something. I suppose every one of us once was a youth struggling over some issue. And dad said, no, you're not going tonight. And we went to our bedroom and it was turning inside. And we had time to think. What would have happened if you'd had a cell phone in your hand that you could text all your other friends who had the same kind of carnality in their hearts? Would it have been a different outcome? How can you help fathers understand what I just told you? And when fathers hand this to them at 12 years old, my children don't get a phone at 12 years old. There's some in our group who do. And then there's sometimes friends from school would like to plan a birthday party and they want to send a message to one of my girls. And they can. There's an avenue. They send it to mom's phone. And mom can arrange it with them. And whatever they need to do, they do on mom's phone. And some little children, strange, you got to use your mom's phone. Yeah, I use my mom's phone. I use a lot from my mom. And my mom looks over my shoulder a lot. And that's the way it should be when they're 12. We have a family of girls. We had 8 girls and 1 boy. And so when my girls get a driver's license and they're on the road or have a job away from home, then I just can hardly stand to send them out without a phone in their hands to help themselves. But there's limitations and there's openness. Every one of the phones must be open. Every one of the phones, they not have a screen lock on it that I cannot access. I need to be able to pick it up at any time. Well, we must be serious about the impact. All things edify not. They don't build us up spiritually. There's a lot of lightheartedness and foolishness, and it distracts from good values. The third point that I want to talk about is curiosity. Do you know what the Athenians were known for? They were known that they spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or to hear some new thing. And I tell you what, it's a shame they didn't have a smartphone in those days. They could have done it a lot better. No, they shouldn't pursue that. But you understand? If Athenians were here today, they would say, my, we can do much more of this. Faster, quicker, all the way around the globe. We must understand that curiosity and inquisitiveness can lead us astray. And fascination. In my experience, when the internet first was available to our people, I was fascinated. I was a school teacher. It was like an endless world book encyclopedia set that you could find anything. Little did I realize how inaccurate some of the stuff is. I went to an animal health show because we sell some animal health products. And an old veterinarian there who's ready to retire was bemoaning the fact of what the internet has done to the veterinary industry. You know, you don't need a vet today. You can Google any problem that your dog has. And you can find what you ought to give it. You can actually buy the stuff online. But he told us how he reads some of that stuff and he says, listen, it may have worked for that person with his dog, but for most dogs, it will kill them to do that. And there it is. And that's an answer for this problem that your dog has. And he said, you know what? We have come to a day when people don't respect a 75-year-old vet with all his experience. They go to the web and someone who's just starting to play around with taking care of dogs has the same voice as a 75-year-old vet. He was obviously, as an older person is, kind of bemoaning the change and remembering the good old days. But there's some truth to it. We must understand that curiosity and inquisitiveness can lead us astray. Romans 16, verse 19 says, I would have you wise unto that which is good and simple concerning evil. Now, that doesn't mean like stupid. That means pure, simple concern, not mixed. Not that cup of water with muck in there the other night. Simple concerning evil. Just keep it away. Gossip and the busybody problem. Oh my, the Thessalonian problem of busybodying other men's matters. It's with us today with the cell phone. How do you regulate it? And you know what? Even without internet access, just simple text, and we can, and news can fly around the world faster than preachers can get there in person to put out the fires. News sometimes troubles us, but we're curious and we want to know it. I have a sister who's a heathen, walked away from God. And not so long ago, we met with her and visited a little bit. And I asked her about something that was happening in the world. And she said, Luke, she said, I don't read the news. She said, because someone taught me a long time ago, if you can't change it, don't load yourself up with it and live without it. And that's a heathen sister. False beliefs, untrue ideas, conspiracy theories. Oh, conspiracy theories. I trust that they're not running through your... But listen, curiosity and falsehoods and unimaginable things. And our people, my people and your people are gullible. And they soak it up and they spend time on that stuff. And it... God, deliver us. If there was one thing that I wish I could reach up and find a switch and turn it off, it would be that one right there. There's probably 10 others if I think long enough, but it's going to damn our people. So we must understand that curiosity. And so this is not about a filter. This is about any kind of electronic. This is about a simple phone call. We have to understand. I believe that with this point, we should teach ourselves not to window shop, browse the web. My personal experience, I've gotten to the point where if I need something on the web, I want to be able to go out, find it, get it, and get off. This business of going out and then click on the next one and look there and read that and go here, oh my, over here, over there. And it is fascinating and there's a lot there. And you can, in fact, there's things that preachers can use on the web. Little short stories. And you can just get absorbed in all that. And guess what? Time gets away. Actually, in my experience, sitting down with my little accountability group there at Providence and talking about internet, you know what our number one confession is every time? Time wasting. Time wasting. It actually seems innocent until you look back and realize how much was there. We know when a bad picture comes up. We know. Our conscience says, bang, bang. But minute after minute after minute, time gets away. It does in a message, too. Well, number four, good relationships. Listen, this is a heavy burden on my heart. Good relationships are built face to face. One of the things that hit me sideways soon after I quit teaching school and I had a cell phone in my pocket, a former student sent me a text saying, I'm sorry I cheated in school. Something is wrong to text a confession when you both live in Lebanon County. Come on, let's meet at a coffee shop. Let's meet at church. Let's talk. What? Oh, text a confession. Good relationships are built face to face. And I know, brother, one of the brothers talked about it this morning. I believe Brother Dale talked about documentation of a conversation, and I understand that with email, and I respect that. But you know what? Even email, we should not reprove a brother across email. If you love him that much, that you care about his life, you need to go look in his face and talk to him about it. Because you know what? It'll be kinder than when it's just words in an email. That's my experience. I'm sorry. I have written some very nasty emails. I have sent some texts already that should not have been text. And I realize that distant closeness, that ability to lob a missile in there, let him... My carnal heart, I have to say no to that. I know sometimes there's distance involved and sometimes, but a phone call even is better yet, to get them on the phone and talk. Now, one of the things that's true, I believe, is if you have a person-to-person relationship and you meet with this person and then you're distant because of geography and you do some electronically, that works. Right now there's some conversations going on and on a little chat with the bishops about a few things. And the reason that works is because we regularly sit down, talk about things around the table. And then in between, there's some things that we work on in preparation for that. But if we never sat down at a table, it wouldn't work. It would soon deteriorate. That's my personal belief. Good relationships are built face to face. Social media is unreal and distant. Listen, I want to tell you something. If you didn't know this, people do not picture their worst condition on Facebook. They don't picture, they don't put a picture of the buck that they didn't shoot. They put a picture of the big buck. They don't tell you that it took 11 years wasting their time out there in the woods until they got this big rack buck. And you're led to believe that this happens every year. See, that's what we do with social media. You can choose what you put on for your face. You can choose how people view you. And they don't see you in real life. Misunderstandings are more common when communicating electronically. We need to see each other's faces. And that's so, probably every one of us could tell stories about that. Just go in person. Don't administrate church electronically. Now, occasionally I'll send a text to somebody saying, look, you and I need to talk. When would be a good time to talk? I like, and maybe it's wrong, but I like this, the idea that I can send something through. I don't know what they're doing. See, that already changed in my mind because it feels a little bad to just ring their phone. I might break in the middle of their job or whatever. And that changed from years ago in my experience. But to be able to send a message saying, look, sometime when you have a minute, I want to call you. When would it work? And then they get it a little later and say, oh, tonight I'm free. And then we make some connection. That's about the only thing I do with administration is be able to arrange a time where we can talk about something. So put the phone down and go pay someone a visit. Brotherhood, we need in-person services and not like we did in COVID with across a computer screen. I can't tell you how frustrated I was to stand in front of a microphone and with my laptop there and preach to a congregation that wasn't there. It's just not the brotherhood of God. And I understand, and it's a real thing. We have one brother, Brother Galen Martin, is still in the hospital with COVID this second time around. Was laid really low. So it is a real thing. But you understand what I'm saying. In person, face to face. You need to shake a brother's hand. Generally, there's something wrong when we make out better with distant friends than with close friends. And I want you to think about this, pastors. Sometimes in our churches, we have people who have close friends many states away, but they can't hardly get along with anybody in this congregation. They're not close to anybody. That's a sign of trouble. The closest people, the people who live with us, we need to open ourselves to them and we need to receive from them the reproof and the help and the correction and then there's a bond there as we grow together. That's what brotherhood is all about. We should not let it continue to happen that we have people sitting on an island right in our church and they'll talk about how close friends they have from this state and that state and another state, and it's usually a sign they're not willing to receive what they have here. And you know what I've observed? Sometimes those people will get so tired of us, they'll move to that state where that nice family is from, and after a while they don't fit there either. And we know why it is. Good relationships are built face to face, and we belong to get along and receive help from brotherhoods, the people who live with us. And that's where we need to make it work. Some time ago, a man from another church was having problems, and he met a brother from our congregation, and he was talking about his testimony to the Lord. And this brother from our congregation said, he has such a wonderful testimony. Why is he out of the fellowship over at that church? And I looked at the brother from my congregation. I said, look, all you need to tell him is go home and be reconciled with his brothers. Then all is well. You don't need to tell a flowery story here at Providence. Just go home, be reconciled with your brothers. Work out all those things. Confess whatever sins are there. And smooth that all out. And then it'll be wonderful. That's where we need to start. That's the gospel of Jesus Christ. Go home and tell. Well, number five, we must make time for meditation. Psalms is full of that. I will meditate in thy precepts. We had this teaching here today and yesterday. Meditation, Bible reading and prayer, reflection, pondering. We need to meditate on the Word and meditate on deep truths and meditate on our lives and meditate on our challenges and our tests and think about why is this happening to me and what is influencing that. We need to meditate on our family needs. One of the things that I enjoy about coming to meetings like this is the hours of travel time that I have time to think and kind of sort through family and church and meditate and pray. And I often don't even listen to music until I get tired. And sometimes if the issues that I'm facing are big enough, I don't get tired for quite a few hours. Meditation time. I don't understand people who have to always have something jangling in the background and can't. I love quiet time. That's what I don't like about retail, because people are coming and going and claiming my time until the end of the day. I'm like, I don't even know who I am, because I was absorbed in this on this retail floor. We must make meditation time. Meditate about how to reach the lost today. And I'd like to just draw this little picture on the board. This is what I think is happening in our world today. Yesterday I drew that picture of the man looking off to the world and looking to the web and looking to all those things. And he gets this flow going. He gets this flow going. But here's the cross, and here's Jesus Christ, and here's God. And we really need a lot of flow going this way. This way. He is only prepared. I am only prepared to go into this environment to buy things the way the world does them today if I have a strong flow going here between me and the cross. And so much of this and so much of this window shopping gets this flow going, and he's filled with the web and not filled with the Spirit. And they might even be good things from the web, and he might have even history and all kinds of things. He might be all filled up with that, but he doesn't have that flow with Jesus Christ. And that comes, meditation is a huge part of that. Reading the Word and meditating and then thinking on it and trying to put it into perspective and trying to understand what it means. Meditation. Number 6 is another huge burden on my heart with this technology, and that we must protect our worship services. I told you the other day I was at a service where people came, young people came, and they looked up their Bible verses on their phone. I don't think that should be. That's my personal preference. Some would mark me old. You know what? But the reality is, if you and I don't teach them why they shouldn't do that, the next generation will do that and wonder why we were so strange in saying we shouldn't do it. We must protect our worship day, our worship services. Is there something lost to go all electronic? Well, you see, the problem that I have, I'll just be honest with my problem. I told you the other day, this is my picture book too. In fact, I just looked at my screen. There's a message from Steve Ebersole that says, "Oh no," with an exclamation point. I really wonder what that is. And we're in a worship service. And I just saw that. It's there. What am I going to do? I would like to open it. I'm not going to do that. But if I was sitting back where I could, you know, probably look at it off to the side, I might be tempted to do that. You understand what happens when the good old book doesn't have, "Oh no," with an exclamation point from Steve Ebersole as I'm opening this up. There's something like closing out. There's something like the quietness of shutting off the world. And when I have it in my pocket, it's not shut off. And so I think we must protect our worship services. And I'm even concerned about, when I came in here, I was like, I see somebody might use visual aids here today, but nobody did. I'm a little concerned about electronic visual aids and moving pictures to illustrate something. And I know at one point, maybe in older days, we wouldn't even use a whiteboard. So this maybe is one step there. But I'm concerned about the electronics. I preached twice off of a screen because I was caught somewhere. I do all my sermons electronically, so they're filed, and I preach twice off a screen. I won't do that again. I will recopy my notes by hand because there's this constant fear of the battery going dead, something jamming, and all of that. Listen, I have my notes written down, and I put numbers on the corner because I've already been in settings where the wind blew them away, and it's pretty easy to just get them back and say, okay, it's 4, 5, 6, 7, and put them back in order, and you can start preaching again. And when my electronics goes down, I'm stuck, and I don't want to have to say, sing a verse of song, I need to reboot my tablet. Now, forgive me if I'm too hard to the younger generation, but I think we must protect our worship services. And if a day comes that there's a protected way to do that, this is the other thing I'm concerned about. You know, in persecution days in countries where they decided to stamp out the Word, when they went chasing down every Bible, they had a hard time finding every Bible. And look at the... But you know how easy it is to stamp out electronic things today when Facebook says this is not going to be and blocks things out, and when those kind of, with all the power that they have, it says, okay, gone is everything Bible off the web and off whatever and stuff. I don't want them to have that control. I want the Word of God in my hand and in my heart. And we need to help our people to understand that as well. Number 7, we must be good stewards and know contentment. One of my first phones, one of my first cell phones was an old flip phone I had for about 12 years. And then the day came when I couldn't get a charger for it anymore, and I had to replace it. It still worked, but the charger was shot, and I couldn't buy another charger because of the plug-in. And so I had to replace it, and I bought an iPhone. That's when I went to smartphones. I bought an iPhone, and I showed some of the boys at church, and we were talking about it, because it's fascinating to them, but I wanted them to understand how preachers and bishops make decisions what we're doing. And I told them that, you know, I'm planning to keep this thing for 14, 15 years like my flip phone. And one of the wise young men there in that circle, he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, "Brother Luke, iPhones are not meant to keep 15 years because there's a new version each year and they want you to buy a new one and upgrade. You'll have to do something different than what the Apple Corporation wants you to do if you're going to keep it for 15 years. You know what? I didn't have that phone for 15 years because it dropped in a bucket of water and destroyed it. And then I get another one." Contentment. Stewards of our time. Stewardship of time. Stewardship of money. I want you to think about it. When I got married, my wife and I got married, I think we paid $29.95 for phone service at our house. We bought probably a $20 or $30 phone that hung on the wall. And I think it was $29.95. Maybe there's a little more for long distance, but something like that. And that's what we paid per month to have phones. I want you to think about the money that is spent in your congregation when we buy expensive phones and we buy data plans and all the money that's spent for that kind of stuff. It's huge. It's huge. Stewardship, contentment. Content with such things as we have. I talked about online shopping. I told you how I could go while driving to prayer meeting and order ticked off from Amazon, that little thing to take ticks off your back. And you can, online shopping is so, And you can get it there, and then you can look and you can see what else is out there, and it just breeds discontentment. Oh, and you can sit down on Sunday afternoon and order something off of Amazon. What are we going to do with that? You know where that started? In my area. I know that many Mennonite men sit down and read Lancaster Farming on Sunday afternoon. That's a paper. Should I look through the ads and all the tractors that are for sale and circle things and fold a page over that Monday I'm going to call and check up on this? Is it the Lord's day or is it my day? And what am I doing? And can I just order things off of Amazon? It'll come. Amazon will deliver to your place on Sunday too. Stewardship and contentment. Well, I have a few practical encouragements, especially for those who are using, or when, if and when you begin to use some of this, there's a few practical encouragements that I'd like to give to you. And again, I respect if you've drawn the line way back from this. These are a few practical encouragements if you're using it, if there's some access to it. Number one, turn off notification beeps and buzzes. Just avoid it being a dictator. It needs to be your servant. So clip it so it's not always catching your attention, because every notification sets you on edge to, I need to answer it. I'm really curious what Steve's talking about. What's in this loop? You see, that just happened to me. Number two, refuse to start your day with electronics. Now that point comes from a secular writer about avoiding addiction. Many people get up, the first thing they do is check their phones or their email. Listen, I want to ask you a question. How would you feel if you get up and 5 mornings of the week, when you get up, there's 5 of your church people at your front door knocking on the door. As you come out of your bedroom, they're like, Brother Luke, I have a question for you. I have a problem you need to solve. I'd be a little irritated if they wouldn't let me get my cup of coffee and sit down and read my Bible. And but you know what? They can do it with email. They can do it with text. And I pick up my phone. I got 2 or 3 things on the burner right now. I need to return home tonight because there's some things that it's just. You open it up and suddenly your day has started with those 5 things that are problems and you didn't start with God. And you gave away something. Now you need to address those problems, yes, but don't open them up first. Go to God first. Don't let it hijack your mind. And then find a place for that. And one of the things of advice is, if you do email, maybe have it on the computer, some of those things at a place when you check your, you know, maybe in an evening or morning, you check your email and that's it. It's not always. See, when everything comes here, from email to text to whatever, so everything comes here, then people can get a hold of me and put their burdens on me really, really quickly, and I feel compelled. I got to do something really, really fast. And gone is the day of saying, you know what?
I need a little bit of time here. You can feel overwhelmed. You can feel burned out. You can feel, there's been times I was working on one problem and another problem came in right there. And it piles up. And you need some space and some time to say, look, I hear you, but I need to pray about this. I need to talk to some others. I need a little bit. The third thing, and we must bring this to a close. I want to open up here for some questions and comments if you have. The third thing is what I've called mind the gaps. Mind the gaps. If you have opened up to this, this is what happens. So I'm standing in line at Redner's at the grocery store. There's three people in front of me. I'm waiting to check out. And I have a few seconds. And so check. Oh, let's see what's going on here. The gaps. You know what? The human body, human mind is made that we need some gaps. We need a few times to stop and just ponder and not fill it up with electronics right away. You sit down in the restroom and pull the phone out. Oh, at Jonestown, I made a little sign that hangs at the door right in front of the commode, and it says, using the commode and your cell phone simultaneously is known to the state of Pennsylvania to cause longer than usual wait lines outside the restroom door. Listen, we need gap times where you just stop and refresh your mind. Your mind, no, not kick it in neutral, not do anything, but just mind the gaps. Don't fill it up. Don't let that stuff get every gap. You get to the end of the day and you're not your own. You are bought with a device. You need some reflective moments. Number four, get off social media apps and circles as much as possible. That's one of the things that young mothers are telling me, that they, in the home, you know, often a mother's busy and doesn't have the social connections that we have as we go out to business, with the business world, and so they long for some fellowship, and so they get on these social chats, and it's maybe a young mother's chat, how to take care of your babies, and maybe some natural ways of treating things instead of going to the medical world. And after a while, you can sell Avon, you can sell all kinds of things. I don't have all those names. I get so weary of our ladies, our mothers, getting all tied up in holding all kinds of parties to decorate things in their home, and all that, and getting all busy with that. And little children need mom's attention. And the house needs cleaned, and a meal needs made, and some simple values pursued. They have the thing called Pinterest. I don't know how many of you know what Pinterest is. It's this little app, and it's creative. You can take palettes, and you can make beautiful things around your house, and Pinterest will show you how to do it. You can make a homemade barbecue grill and out of a 55-gallon drum, cheap, and that's me. I love that kind of thing, to do something with nothing. But you know what? Somewhere you have to quit. Somewhere you can't follow every one of those things. After a while, it dominates your mind. You need to get off of some of that kind of stuff. Number five, we need to have some family time without electronic distractions. We need to eat supper together around the table with no phones, not even a bishop dad. My wife sometimes, I don't have my phone at the table, but I'm quiet and I'm thinking. And my wife sometimes pokes me and says, "You're 1,000 miles away, aren't you?" And I'm like, "You're right. I'm not at the table. The children are chattering." Family time without electronic distractions. Meal time, family worship. We need time together. And number six and last is we need to keep some old time values alive. And they are values that, when I say old time, seems like it places them in a period of time, but they have blessed God's people for many years. Things like simply reading a good storybook. We need to keep that alive. After a while, we can't read anything but the screen. We need to keep music and singing together alive. We need youth groups who love to sing in person. And it's fine. It's wonderful they record it so they don't have to have streaming music. But just sing unto the Lord and worship and enjoy that. Physical games together with the family. A good game of softball with two families from church. From the older youth to the younger children, and helping them learn how to do this and hit. Give them a fourth strike and a fifth strike. Come on, we're in this. This is not competition. This is not the youth boys that got to have this right. I don't want these little guys. No, this is about us. This is about community. And this is the same values that you need at business meeting in church. Need to play out there on the ball field. But don't lose your heart in playing ball. But there's some value in that that's better than sitting on the screen. Doing some physical exercise. You ought to do things like backyard farming and gardening and caring for some animals and some vegetables. And you ought to do things like bird watching and things like tree and plant identification. All recently was somewhere, and one of my fellow bishops, there was a little snake below the tree, and we didn't know what it was. It thought it was a garter snake, but had some other markings on it. And so he got his phone out and he said, "Oh, there's a thing called Google Lens. You start, you take a picture, it tells you exactly what that snake is." And she said, "Oh," he said, "that the tree identification, you can just, you know, it, you can find anything and star maps. You point toward a star in the sky and it tells you exactly what constellations you're looking at and stuff." And where's the good old star maps? Must I pull out my phone for everything? Can't I do some things? And do I actually really need to know what that snake is? Do I have to? Some good old values of getting out among nature. And, well, those are some things to help us to master and not let this thing master us. Do you have a hold of it? Do you have it in a cage? Do you have it tied with a chain, wherever it is? You've got to have it mastered. If you don't have it mastered, it's going to master us. What are your questions? They have microphones here. Raise your hand. They'll come with a microphone. You have a question or comment here.
So you lock down your laptop, your desktop. What about your phone, filter on your phone? Can you talk about that?
Okay, so yes, I explained this. On my phone, I have Custodio locked down on my phone. A lot of us choose to lock our browsers down. In Pilgrim, we wouldn't have to. But browsers available all the time is a challenge. But so there's apps you can put on your phone. I use Custodio with my family, my children. So my son, my wife and my son get my accountability record, and I get my son's.
How does that work on the phone? How does that look? Can you give a brief explanation of that as far as accountability? Or does it act the same way? You can't do pretty much the same thing as that. You can't go places.
You have an option on your phone. If you don't have the browser locked down, then I can do a lot like this. It goes through a filter. But what happens is as soon as I hit a word that's bad or a site that it deems bad, it sends a note to my wife immediately. It's like a text message that goes to her immediately, her and my son. And then when my son hits one of these words, I get it and she gets it.
What did you call it?
Custodio. Okay. There's a number of those. So my son, when he was serving in Honduras, he got used to accountable to you, but that won't stop you. That's not a fence to keep you from going there. With accountable to you, you can go, even if it's a bad flag. It'll set a flag, but you can still go there. That's why when it hits a plumbing term that it doesn't like, it'll send a flag, but it'll let me go right there. And if it's legitimate, I open up and say, "Oh, it didn't know what to do with that word." So my son has accountable to you on his phone and Custodio, which accountable to you is I can see anything he does. I can see the text message that he sent to his girlfriend. But he has always wanted to have that open and have me as his partner. And we've kept that way even as he started dating. I don't often check up on him, but it's open. There would be some others in here that know some others. I don't have the whole list. There are technology committees that have studied some of that stuff more. I am so busy in church work that when I found something that works, I don't keep exploring and trying and trying. I get it working so I can do my work and go on with life.
How about taking our phones to worship?
How about taking our phones to worship?
Yes. In church.
In church. Well, I have my phone on me today in church. I typically leave it in the car. My wife's mother went to the emergency room this morning, and so I have the phone on me. There's a few of our chicken farmers who have it because they have the potential of the alarm calling them. That's one thing that you ought to, as a church, you need to think about and talk about. Do we carry them into church? If you have them that they buzz and beep, I normally have mine turned in airplane mode. I didn't today. That's why I saw this notification from Brother Steve. It's on the front of my screen. Here's Brother John.
Something you did not address, of course you can't address everything, and that is the breakdown of communication between the old and the young. And this is maybe sour grapes. But Proverbs 4 talks about a father talking to his son.
That's right.
And the Bible assumes that you learn by precept. You gain the wisdom of all the past generations by the communication between the generations. We're living in a time where the old people are not anymore a source of people's information. I know a whole lot less about many, many things than what these young people do. So you go to a young person for advice. You don't go to an older person.
That's right. And part of that is the whole push, the whole idea of a youth group. So I have my youth group. I even struggle with this with going cleaning up after a hurricane. We take a bunch of young people. It needs to be a mixture of older ones and young men working together, and there you learn. But you're right. Technology has allowed us to have our little circles and receive less from the older men. Over here, Brother Leroy.
Brother Luke, I appreciated the clarity and the way you address things. And with you, I was challenged, and I need to, and I have made some commitments on the news line and so on. One question I have, and that is in your filter and your whitelist there, is there a reason why you didn't put EMI People and Compass over on the filter list?
Okay, they actually, I believe you're right. I believe that EMI People and Compass would also do just the filter thing. When I was thinking, like, Covenant Eyes, I don't think you can do a whitelist. Covenant Eyes, I think you can only do a... Yeah, you're right. These two would actually provide this service as well as this service. I probably misled in that.
Added benefit of being Mennonite organizations who do it.
Right.
I've been using EMI People for years, and they do a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, the deacon from our congregation.
Yes, I was just wondering if you have a reason for not having them over there.
No. I put them there because I know that they do this white list that most other ones don't. So these actually should be, they have options on both sides of this line.
Thank you.
Actually, the brothers that are doing this, Compass, we had used their Redwood device for a while, a tremendously powerful tool that you can set. But it was so powerful, it took so much of my time to set filters to try to let the right thing through or whatever. It became cumbersome to set all those things. But what they have in there is very, very powerful. And it's well worth looking into if you're looking at something for your church.
One thing that was run into when we looked at it in conference is one brother who's in IT said that the one that takes, and I can't remember which one it is, that takes snapshots.
Covenant Eyes takes
Covenant Eyes. As possible as that one, that it actually can be a security issue since it may be taking pictures of your passwords and stuff. So that's something you want to be aware of, who gets what.
Okay, there was another comment back here, another hand.
I just wanted to say that Compass is adding a technology that I think is really fascinating. They call it pruning. So in addition to just a filter, which they do filter, if it's a completely objectionable site, they'll filter it. But if it's a site like your plumbing sites that might have something that otherwise could get blocked in a filter, they'll just prune out what they deem to be the objectionable part and send the rest through. Mm-hmm. And that is powerful also on sites like Amazon, because so many of the advertisements is where you get the problem stuff. Mm-hmm. And they'll prune out images and words. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you won't get all the content on the page, which saves a lot of download data anyway. But I think that's a powerful tool when we look at making the Internet a cleaner place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and the brothers put an effort into that. There are brothers in the Anabaptist faith, and they're looking at it from what we value and want to stay away from. And it's been.
I would put in a plug for Compass Foundation. We have, as a congregation, begun using them about 3 years ago. It was a steep learning curve, and if you're used to free access, you will find it frustrating until you learn how to use it. But it has been a tremendous blessing for us. They have a strong accountability built in. They have, so there are areas on the web that you don't normally need to go. But for example, if you choose as a congregation to not use social media, but maybe there's sometimes you need to use, go to a Facebook marketplace. You can go there and you have to take an extra step or two, then it throws an accountability report to your people, to whoever is assigned that. However, the thing about Compass is that they have a fence, a perimeter that they, and I'm assuming that many of the others do as well, but they do not allow certain things through ever. Mm-hmm. At least their intention. No filter is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in our particular setup, we have a brother from our church who has our modem that's connected to the outside world. And in that, right there at the beginning is all the porn sites are all blocked. There's a whole list available out there what businesses block to keep their people off stuff that has absolutely nothing. So then from there it comes into all of our computers. So going out through to the web, we can't even access that. But we also have Wi-Fi for customers who are waiting on a trailer to be repaired, and there's customer Wi-Fi available, but they can't even go to those spots because it's filtered right there. So while that's, when a customer accesses, it doesn't go through this filter, but it hits that filter, and a few customers have told us, you must have a good filter on there because I checked it out. So tech people can help you set those things up, and I'm not real techie. I do a little of it enough to find my way around, but I'm at the point in life where I just find what works and is usable and get a system set up and then go to work and work and stop reinventing the wheel all the time and looking for something better. I would say that one of the things that I didn't mention is some of this, so you have these messaging apps like WhatsApp. What's the one that, now the name slips my mind, it's another one that our people have, Telegram. I want to tell you something, brothers, and I'm going to tell you in a preacher's setting, and this is one that, okay, our people ought not be on Telegram, period, okay? You need to get your people off Telegram, this is why. When you're on Telegram, there's a place you can go to find Telegram people near you, and it's not just people that are in your phone book, in your computer, you can find worldly people. And you get into a big city, and the harlots of that city will have a thing there, and you can find them, and you can communicate right with them. You ought not be on Telegram. Now, CloudVail, if you use CloudVail, is made, I believe, by the Haldeman Mennonites, if I have that right. CloudVail is this thing put in a cage. It's the same thing as Telegram, but it's in a cage. And you can't see people nearby you. You can't. They took the technology and caged it for more acceptable for God's people. So if you're in a group where your people are using that, by all means get them off of that. If they need something of that, if neighbors have Telegram that they need to communicate to, our people can go to CloudVail and you can communicate to a Telegram person, and you won't have the trash of Telegram on CloudVail, is the way I understand it. I, again, go so far and then I burn out. So from Cloud, if you have CloudVail on your phone, you're in that cage. You can talk to someone who has Telegram, like that doesn't have CloudVail because it's on the same platform, but it doesn't open you up to everything that you have in Telegram. Those are the things that your brethren need to be figuring out and looking at. And I hate to say that where young people are around, because you know what that is? That's too much knowledge. And they can go, I want Telegram. I want, where are the heart? There they, bam. And then I failed. Well, did I fail? What do you do with that? Fathers and church leaders need to talk about it and equip our people. There are other, here's, yes.
I just wanted to comment on the remark about the picture taking by Covenant Eyes. There is a brother that has me as an accountability partner for Covenant Eyes, and the pictures that are sent are blurred, so you won't see passwords on them, and they blur them on purpose so that the person that receives reports is not defiled by pornography and things like that. They leave just enough so that you can know what it's about without, they try to find the balance there anyway. So you won't worry about the privacy issue as so much as...
That's what I thought. I've seen some of those pictures, and it was my impression that you couldn't really pick up a password. It's blurred, but you can see the essence of what's there.
Well, I haven't used that, but I will say what John Lee was referring to, it wasn't just passwords. It was a greater security issue of everything that you look at. Everything is stored on a server somewhere, which is safe. But it's out there for the public, for security, for investigation, whatnot. It's out there. And it's docked right to you. So that's a bigger concern. I think it was just an overall security concern. And so this man knows a lot about how stuff works behind the scenes that we have nothing to, I know nothing of. So that was a concern he had.
Yeah, and that's, I don't know if I should even say this, but I have somebody in one of my churches who got away from here because some of his competition is involved in the background programming of this and the background work of this, and he's about certain that they learned some of his trade secrets through watching his tracks from his business. I have no way of proving any of that. I'm simply stating that. I'm not so sure that anything is really safe today when you go out across the web. Here we got a brother.
You've mentioned several times how the people are struggling to keep a train of thought, attention spans, and all that. And that's very real. But there's also another tact of study that I've been interested in. I used to do a lot of reading. Somehow ordination kind of took away my time for reading. But there's been a lot of studies made about, and it's a little bit of a puzzle, I think, still, why people do not pick up as much. When somebody reads on a screen, over and over again, multiple studies have shown that retention is not there, much less retention. So that has implications for our Bible reading and our study, for sermons. We teach our young people to spend time in the Word, and if they're doing it on their phones, they're probably not picking up nearly as much as you would think. And so something I would just throw in there is that we need to teach our people not to do their Bible reading. Bible study, I do most of my Bible study on a computer, but my Bible reading I do with my Bible, and there is a difference. So that'd be an aspect of this subject.
Part of it. Yeah, and we all vary in how we learn. When I taught school, we went to a program for helping slow learners, and they evaluated all of us that were there, and I learned something about myself. I learned best by hearing. That's probably because my daddy talked to me and didn't write me little notes. He talked to me. I learned best by hearing. And I realized that when I have a difficult text that I'm studying in my office, I read it out loud to get a better understanding. Even if it's my mouth reading it, my ears hear it, I get it better than if I'm just sitting there looking at words. And so we all vary in a little how we receive that, but we got to receive it. No hand here.
I appreciate what I've heard. You mentioned about Telegram, and you almost hate to talk about it because we need to put the filter on the heart. And I appreciate what you said about CloudVeil. I don't know anything about it. But daddies need to be their boy's best friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, close relationship. That's a blessing. And one thing that I remember, you talked about I'm not sure did you use the word generation gap or what, but that was the idea. I remember as a little boy standing outside a church after Wednesday evening, and the fireflies are going, and there's this big old circle about 15, 20, all the way from the old brothers all the way down to the little boys. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. And the dear old grandpas had some interesting stories. And sometimes the youth had a story or whatever. It was just interesting. It was good. And one thing that Glenn Bender said, we need to love what God loves and hate what God hates.
That's right.
You mentioned Telegram and CloudVeil. I'd be interested in hearing what you had to say about WhatsApp.
Well, WhatsApp used to be more just like a texting group, but now with statuses that you can post, you can take pictures and show people who follow what you're doing. It becomes half. It's a mini Facebook. Facebook bought WhatsApp for however many million or billion dollars. They didn't do it because they want to offer a free app. They did it because there's revenue in it for them. And there's some changes coming to that, and I don't know that I understand it all. But I do use WhatsApp. But there's some transition. We're ready to make some transitions to, there's another one. I forget what. Signal. Signal is a much better one. It doesn't do, it's just more like a text, but you can do a group. You can do a group text. You can do, three or four brethren and send a message and making plans for a meeting on just a simple text. Well, okay, we got another hand here.
Well, I don't want to take your time. I really appreciate you sharing this.